Welcome. The Douglas Railroad Interpretive Center is glad to have you aboard for this audio tour and invites you to return often. Center hours are posted, and we look forward to seeing you again. Just because we aren't here doesn't mean you can't learn about our important railroad history. First stop is the Depot Building, which was restored by the city of Douglas. Our conductor on this trip is Bill Truitt.
When the first thing you see in front of the depot is the brickwork, and that indicates where the edge of the platform was. The tracks actually used to run parallel to that, and you look across the street and you see the big red building over there, and that was actually the freight depot. It was built the same time, 1886. And what was cool about that is that the engineers, when they take time off, they would actually sleep upstairs on the second floor. The building was built in 1886. It looks exactly like it did. It's gone through many different colors over the years. It was blue at one time until they restored it in 1992. It's a pretty standard-looking depot. Chicago Northwestern was actually the ones in charge of building it, and they used subsidized plans. You know, I've seen videos of ones that look exactly the same as ours, you know, all across the country. You'll notice really cool detail. There's a bay window sticking out of the side of it, and that was the station master's office, and he would actually be able to look up and down the tracks to see the train coming. What's really cool about this place is when it was first built, it had two bathrooms, which is amazing back in 1886, when most people didn't even have indoor plumbing, had two pot-bellied stoves, one on either end of the building, and the cool thing is the chimneys are still there from the original fireplaces. One end was the freight room, and the other end was the passenger room, and you'll notice there's a great big door on the far right-hand side when you're facing the building, and that was the freight door. That's where all the freight would go into.
We know many of you are most intrigued by the Iron Horse steam locomotive that dominates our park, and we'll answer a lot of questions about it as the finale of our tour. Right now, let's move over to the far left of the depot and check out the caboose. It served as a combination office space and living quarters, but was also a vital observation deck. Even though you're visiting during off hours, we'd like to give you an inside look.
This is our second oldest car. It was built in 1885. It's one of the last wooden cabooses in the country, because unfortunately people don't keep them and they scrap them for whatever reason. The job of the caboose was basically like an office on wheels, and it would be the trainman's job to sit up in the cupola to keep an eye on the train to make sure there was no slack, which is too much space between the couplers on a train, or that there was any smoke coming from the wheels, which meant the train was going to be on fire. They also, when they first started using them, the brakeman would actually walk across the top of the cars and hand turn the wheels on a train to stop it. In the wintertime, walking across the cars, you know, that was back when the brake wheels were up on the top of the cars. Nowadays, they're all automatic, but you still have a brake wheel. Off to the side here is an old pot-bellied stove, and that was used for cooking and heating. And I can imagine it did a really good job of keeping it warm in here. This is an original stove. It hasn't been restored or anything like that at all. There's also a sink over here. It doesn't have water to it. You'd probably have a big jug or whatever for your water, but the fact that there's a sink in here is pretty impressive, too. There's also a bathroom in here, which is nice. Up in the cupola up here, there's a gauge on the far wall, and that's the air pressure gauge for the brake lines, so they could keep an eye on it while they were up here, too, just in case too much pressure and not enough pressure was in the brake lines so the train couldn't stop. And on the left-hand seat here, there's a lever, and that's an emergency brake lever. The brakeman could actually pull that if he saw something going on, and he'd be able to pull that and it would stop the train.
Day coach 1886 is our next stop. The coach could hold more than 70 adults, exceeding populations of some of the little towns and settlements through which it passed. Once again, we are led inside by guide Bill Truitt.
Need some cowboy boots to
Yeah.
We're inside the yellow and green day coach. It's our oldest car here. It was built in 1884 by the Chicago Northwestern Railway. And it was basically, like it says, it's a day coach. It was either for passengers who couldn't afford to sleep in the day in the sleeper cars back then, or for shorter trips. This one actually came through Douglas a few times back in the 1800s. What's really cool about this car, when you look in here, you look up towards the top of the ceiling, the lamps in here are actually gas-powered lamps. They have vents above them in order to allow the heat from the lamp to actually go out. This car has been restored a few times, but it's kept all original. Here recently, they replaced all the upholstery on the seats to the exact same upholstery that it had on them back in the 1800s. And the other really impressive thing about this car, it's got two bathrooms in it. So that in itself, and they actually had running water, cold and hot, back in the 1800s. if you look up towards the ceiling, there's covered up windows all along the top there, and those were actually a skylight. This car was actually donated by the Chicago Northwestern Railway back in the 50s, and it's been here in Douglas ever since.
As we now move across to the other side of the depot, it's a good time to say thank you for being here. Your interest and participation is appreciated, and while tours of the Douglas Railroad Interpretive Center are free, we welcome donations. The railroads donated these vehicles to the state of Wyoming, and all were transferred to Douglas in 1992. We are hard at work raising interest and money to restore them fully. Our tour has reached an essential place to relax and enjoy the company of family and newfound friends while on a cross-country trip in a silver dining car that dates to the 1950s.
It was part of the Zephyr train for the Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy Railroad, and all the cars in that train were named Silver or something, Silver Cloud, Silver Peak. And this dining car, they would serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner in here, and they actually had a bar in here as well. And when you walk in, you can see the bar at the very end of the main hallway. And it's got a really interesting-looking mural on it that's got two donkeys, I think it is. But the fact that it's still all in one piece, that's pretty impressive. This is also one of the cars we're hoping to get restored. The kitchen's all stainless steel. It was a full kitchen, had all the stuff that was needed to make any kind of food during the day. I can't imagine how everybody in here worked without bumping into each other, because it's pretty small. It's maybe, I want to say 10 feet wide, maybe. The little alley in between the counters is maybe 4 feet wide. And there was probably 10 to 20 people in here working away, making the food for all the passengers. But it was part of the Zephyr train that would go from coast to coast, and Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy's tagline back when was called Everywhere West. We want people to see what it was like back then during that time period and experience maybe just a little bit. Say, hey, that would be kind of cool to ride a train back then. You know, because nowadays, they've got excursion trains, but unfortunately, 90% of the trains in America now are, you know, commuter trains, and they don't have anything like this. And it's cool to be actually a part of it, something that, you know, to share with people.
The sound of a midnight train.
In the heyday of passenger train travel in the United States, a trip could often take several days, making a place to rest very important. Sleeping cars provided that sanctuary.
This really interesting colored sleeper car, the green and orange, it's part of the Burlington route. It's called the Agassiz Glacier, and that's an actual glacier that was in Montana at one point in time. It was part of the Great Northern Route from Duluth, Minnesota to Spokane, Washington. This is just a regular run-of-the-mill sleeper car. It's got smaller rooms on either end, and then in the middle of it, it's got the bigger first-class cabins. And the first thing you see when you walk in here is a really, really narrow hallway with little rooms on either side of it with privacy curtains. And the beds in here, I want to say, are probably maybe 5 feet long. So I'm 6'2". There's no way I'd be able to sleep on one of those. You know, and these are all individual privacy cabins. The seats would fold down at nighttime, and the bed would actually pull out. And even the smaller cabins here had their own individual toilet. When you look up on the side of the wall here, there's these little compartments, and that's where your shoes would go. You'd put your shoes inside the room, and the porter would open that up, and he'd polish your shoes for the next day. Now in the middle of the car here are the first-class cabins. And you come in here, and they're much, much wider, much, much nicer. They've got two couches in here, your own sink, your own little toilet that folds down to the cabinet. This is the room that I wouldn't mind staying in. I can honestly say it's got two beds. Oh, there's my phone. It's got a fold-down bed on the top, so it's kind of like bunk beds. Your own heater control, you can call a porter, anything like that. And then, of course, you can see you look up towards the corner here, and you can see the shoebox.
We have one more car of interest at the far end of the park. The cattle industry was a vital part of the history of Wyoming generally, and specifically to Douglas.
When you walk around here, you see this big yellow cattle car towards the end of the park, and that's exactly what it was for. It was to haul cattle back and forth. And back in the 1800s to the early 1930s, that was a familiar sight on the railroad tracks, was cattle being hauled up. And that's basically what Douglas started out as, was a cow town. And this car was built in July of 1914 by the UP Railroad, Union Pacific. And it's one of the earlier examples of a cattle car that's still around. A lot of them got scrapped because of the wood. People would use the wood for whatever, you know, build a house or whatever. And what's really cool about our depot here is actually a lot of the inside paneling on the walls came from cattle cars or box cars. You build a station, you got to save money on it.
Heading back toward the depot now, we would once more like to take this opportunity to thank you for visiting. Bill Truitt is anxious to share his wealth of knowledge about the big steam locomotive, but first he says the little rail car has its own charm, in addition to being a critical tool for the safe operation of a railroad.
One of the more interesting things we have here at the park is called a rail car, and that was used for inspection on the rail, and it was a little 5-horsepower engine in it, and the crews, the railroad crews, would go up and down the rails and inspecting the tracks to make sure they were in good shape and like that. And what's really cool is there's groups out there that have these that still run, and they'll go on abandoned tracks during the summertime and just cruise up and down. You know, I wouldn't mind having one. That'd be pretty fun.
Steaming right along, we've reached the time to learn about our pride and joy. This rare steam locomotive and tinderbox is obviously centerpiece of the Douglas Railroad Interpretive Center. Local train expert Bill Truitt says most people want to know how fast it could go.
Average speed of this was probably like 80 miles an hour, believe it or not. It was built in West Burlington, Iowa in 1940. It was retired in 1952, brought to Douglas in 1962. It was at the fairgrounds for a while, and then they brought it over here in 1992. Altogether, it's 104 feet long with the tender on it. The drive wheels, the main drive wheels, are 76 inches tall. It's called the 484 because it's got 4 pilots, 8 drive wheels, and 4 trailing wheels underneath the cab. Mainly for pulling freight because it evenly distributed all the weight better that way. It's able to go faster on the tracks that way. The main drive wheel here, which is part of the whole 8 setup, they'll heat that up to about 1,000 degrees, and then once that's heated up, they'll take the tire, which is the outer rim on the outside of the drive wheel, and they'll slide it on top of that, and they'll let it, the whole thing cool down, and it just kind of pops on there, and it stays. So it's not welded or anything. The air brake system is up towards the middle of the boiler, and there's a bunch of pipes that run along the side of the whole locomotive. And that basically, the point of that was to make sure the train didn't get too much out of control when they're going down a hill or anything like that, so they can stop it in case they had to. The compressor itself, the size of it would be bigger than me almost. It's pretty big, you know. It's kind of crazy how big it is. I'd say it's about 3.5 to 4 feet tall and about 2 or 3 feet wide. And it's just, you know, the cylinders on it are massive. They're about 24 inches in diameter. Nothing on this locomotive is small. You know, they were all built to perform one job, and they made sure that the parts wouldn't wear out on them too fast.
We asked Truitt to take us through how the crew performed their tasks.
There was an engineer and the fireman, and it was the engineer's job to keep it down the tracks, and the fireman's job was to make sure that the steam pressure was good, that the coal was being fed in at the proper rate, that the temperature of the firebox was the right temperature to keep the steam going and everything like that. And this one has an auger system on it to where the fireman doesn't have to shovel the coal, but it does it automatically, but he would control how much coal was actually going into the firebox.
The tender contained a massive amount of water and coal.
The tender can hold 180,000 gallons of water. That's bigger than most swimming pools, surprisingly. The whole point of that was for when you put coal into the firebox, it would heat up the water, which would turn it into steam, and that's what made the locomotive go. The whole front half of the tender here held the coal, and then the back half held the water.
Truitt says building one steam locomotive took a year and a half.
Part of the 05A class of Northern locomotives, they built 25 of them altogether, and this one was built in 1940, and that was right towards the end when they were converting over to diesel electric. It had a 12-year lifespan. Fortunately, it got saved from the scrapyard like a lot of them didn't, and it was brought up here by a couple guys here in Douglas when they found out about it, and so we're fortunate to have one of these. There's only 4 of these class left in the entire country.
The other elephant in the room here is what might initially appear to be a very large gray and white rabbit with antlers. It is, in fact, a representation of a wildlife species that is another worldwide claim to fame for Douglas and Converse County. There are several more smaller, life-size critters adorning a corner inside the Depot Museum and Visitor Center, where we found local expert Dennis Switzer.
Back in the 1930s, the very first jackalopes were discovered out here on the prairie east of town here in Douglas, and they're a rare critter. They don't show up very often, but we like to claim them, and we hang on to them. You drive through Douglas, you can see them down on the bridge, You'll see their likenesses on the bridge, and you'll see one here with the trains, one another one downtown. They're quite the critter. They are very shy. They can be pretty aggressive if they get liquored up. You don't want to mess with one if he's kind of been in the bottle. We do have a hunting season for jackalope. It's a short season. It's only one day a year. You can get licenses here in Douglas, and that one day a year is always on June 31st.
Thank you, Dennis. And on behalf of the Converse County Tourism Board, thank you for listening. We hope you'll return soon during regular visiting hours to see our many other unique displays and tour the interiors of our historic railroad cars.